Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
And joining us right now, one of the most powerful agents in the history of baseball. And that, of course, is Scott Boras. Scott, Joe and Evan, good to talk to you. How are you?
Scott, how are you?
Good afternoon, Joe and Evan. I hope your families and your staff and everyone's safe.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
We thank you. We thank you.
Where is your confidence right now as we sit here on May 14th? We are all starving for baseball. Where's your confidence level? We're going to see Major League Baseball come July.
You know, I really think that Tony Clark and the union did a really, really good job in March, where certainly the players I represent, they got collected and discussed how we're going to manage the public health issue. They were prepared to compromise. They ended up giving up probably anywhere from 40 to 50% of their salaries. I think they really made a great effort in a very solidified message to work with Major League Baseball. When Major League Baseball approached them, it was not, we're going to enforce the CBA and require you to give us 162 games. It was a real compromise and an appropriate one. And I think the union leadership did this early and got an agreement so that it would allow a platform to operate from. And frankly, with the virus, this was at a time that was so much, we were very concerned and knew very, very little about the virus and what we know now about with age groups and underlying medical conditions and going through the most difficult things that and the mortality that New York City had to go through. But I just think they acted early and really got a consensus and the parties reached an agreement. And in reaching that agreement, it really allowed a platform for with integrity for them to operate from. And as I say, the conditions then were far worse than they are now because the unknowns were so much greater. So I think that they did a good job, and because of that, I really believe that I think it's clear the owners want to play, the players want to play. I think everybody in consulting with numerous, medical experts, team doctors, their individual doctors, everyone involved, they really understand the inherent risk of this for players. And we can start looking at models from Korea, from Taiwan, from, soccer, which is, I guess, beginning in England in June and is already operational in Germany and Spain, that we have a good understanding about how to create an environment of safety and health for the players and those operating the game.
So with that said, when the owners now come to the players and basically say that they want, they want this revenue sharing thing, okay, which obviously the players do not want, what's your overall feeling on that, Scott?
Well, let's be fair, is that I do not know of any situation or offers that have been made in that area. And so I don't know of anything where that anything like that has been suggested. I think the one thing that we know about baseball is that we've operated from the union leadership and the players for generations have operated on a no salary cap dynamic. You know, salaried employees and baseball players are among them, and ownership are two different worlds. I mean, baseball is really successful. They've done some really, really good work. You know, Randy Levine, for example, in New York is just a brilliant businessman and has, you know, operated the business side of the Yankees very successfully. And you see a franchise grow to, you know, being worth billions and billions more than it was worth, you know, a decade ago. You see the Oakland A's, they're bought for $180 million and they're worth $1.1 billion. You see the Atlanta Braves where they were purchased for $450 million and now they're worth $1.8 billion. They made $262 million in 2016 and in 2019, it's public record, they made $476 million, $200 million in increase. And you don't see anybody talking about sharing the gains that all the billions of dollars that have been brought to the game, and they shouldn't because they're the owners. It's what owners do. So you don't privatize the gains and socialize the losses. And when we're in these kind of environments where there's a difficulty that is a restraint, an issue, that is something that ownership takes the good and the bad with gains and losses, and that's really how ownership works. But in this case, the one thing about the employees, they've already made a major concession by making sure that baseball was economically feasible because they're only paying the players if they play.
Scott, you're a smart guy. You know what's coming. You know that they're going to try to pull this, and the players are going to say no. They're going to give a lot of the reasons you gave. Then what happens? I mean, do you think this is going to become an ugly, ugly fight once the owners do it and say, we want revenue sharing, and Tony Clark says, not going to happen? What happens next?
You know, I think that the union leadership has really done a good job of getting the voice of the players. And I know the players I represent have been very active in communicating with them. And I think they clearly understand when they made that agreement, that was a major concession. Because you're talking about 162 games of $4.5 billion in player salaries. And they said, look, we're going to work with you in this process. And the players' integrity was that we're going to reach an agreement, and we're going to stand by that agreement, and we're going to honor that agreement. And I think, you know, Tony Clark has said publicly that, look, we've made an agreement, and we're going to honor the agreement, but we're not going to alter the agreement because we just freshly did this agreement. And I think the players stand behind Tony Clark. I think they stand behind the union and what they had to say about this, and I think it's appropriate because of the fact that why did the party sign it? And again, the conditions of the virus were much more unknown and much more. They knew that they were going to be playing games without fans. They knew it. And there's an economic feasibility aspect of this that can be examined and looked at. And that's fine. But I think you're going to find that with the media rights contracts and all the other things, it's going to be very difficult to suggest that owners are far better off playing than they are not playing. And because there's going to be a much different world because they'll be rejecting billions of dollars in media contracts is something that I think is not in the best interest of owners, players, fans, or anyone else.
Talking to Scott Boras, of course, the great baseball agent. If a guy you represented came to you, let's assume that they're going to play the games. One of the players that you represent comes to you and says, look, Scott, I just don't feel comfortable playing. I really don't. I'm concerned for my family. I understand maybe I'm not going to get paid this year, but I just don't feel comfortable doing it. What would you say to that guy?
I would certainly believe that this is based upon absolute medical evidence, and that if he's been given that advice, that he should, each player should make his individual decision. You know, these contracts are employment contracts. They're not servitudes. And so if it's something that's detrimental to the well-being of his personal health and such, that the reality of it is that these are things that need to be looked at, and you need to consult with your medical health professionals, your team doctors, to any medical information you can receive, and make, each player should make an individual decision about what's best for him, because as we know, all players are not similarly situated in this problem when you go to examine their individual health and what impact this virus may have upon them.
From what you've heard, are you comfortable with kind of the safety around all of this about restarting the year, the amount of testing, what the plan would be, trying to limit travel? Is that something you are comfortable with from what you've heard?
You know, I think everyone in baseball, owners, MLB, the union, you know, I myself, you know, I have a medical background. I study pharmacology, and I've talked to over 40 doctors, Korea, Russia, Japan, Taiwan, trying to do the best I can to give the players the information that they need to examine playing environments. We've had testing done by Stanford and USC of kind of the baseball community, some administration, some players. And the thing we're learning is that the isolation part of a working environment really helps, because few, if any, of that group tested positive, less than 1%, in fact. But so the reality of it is, the age group and for the players and for everything, the overall general medical information is very positive for that age group. And with first-class physical condition and few underlying medical conditions. But we still have to evaluate each player individually. We know that from the early test, that isolation of being in a work environment is, and when you go into the real world, you go to the grocery store, and you know, when you're, I'm a farm boy, and I know when they pick the vegetable and they put it in the crate, and then they take it to the truck, and then they take it to the warehouse, and they unload it, and they reload it, and they take it to the grocery store, and they unload it, and then they stock it, and then you have the cashier. You're talking about 8 or 9 people that are untested and buying your products every time you go to the grocery store. So in an isolated environment, players where they have medical care, they have an environment, they have their food monitored, you have a lot of things about their working environment that is very different than the general population. And so those dynamics really help in making an assessment of safety and health. And I think most of the players that, you know, I should say all the players that I represent, I have not had any that have come to me and after reviewing all the information, that they obviously understand that this virus is here, and it's going to be a bit, certainly it's not going away, but they're looking at the dynamics of this, and they understand that there's a risk, but they also understand that looking at their particular circumstances and stuff, that they're an employee base that bears a very, very low risk and a very strong chance of sustaining. And we haven't had any players in baseball in operation around the world that have been hospitalized. So we've got some good models to work off of that tells us more and more information for decision making.
Do you have an idea of how things could work in the state of California? I mean, the governor and I think the mayor of LA has talked about there being basically no sporting events out there. What happens with the Dodgers and the Angels and the Padres and the Giants? I think you're still out in California. What's your take on that situation?
Well, it's going to be rather interesting now, because obviously Tesla and hundreds of employees in Alameda County, which is, if you know anything about the Oakland A's, the Oakland Alameda Stadium, it's in that county. So if they're allowing them to go back to work, and the great thing about baseball is that baseball really promotes many of the criteria that the political environment here wants the population to pursue, and that is isolation. And it really helps isolation for the families to stay at home and watch ball games in the California time zone. in the Pacific time zone, because if you have those games and a plentiful supply of them, it gives them fresh content and a reason to be at home, and I think it really helps.
I like that point. That's a good one. That's a good idea. More baseball, you stay at home. I like
it. Yeah, and you have a reason now. You have something that's entertaining and viable, but the other argument is that you're going to need about 125 people to put on a game at a stadium with a huge ballpark with every opportunity for isolation, and they're going to have testing. That is a lot better working environment than the Tesla factory. And if you allow them to go to work, how can you not allow the baseball teams to go to work? Mm.
When you hear Scott, I don't know if you heard Blake Snell's comments, which, you know, he certainly didn't come across very good. Did you hear what Blake Snell said about all of this?
I did not.
All right.
Basically, he says, you got to understand, man. For me to take a pay cut, it's not happening because the risk is through the roof. If it's a shorter season, less play, I got to get my money. I'm not playing unless I get mine. And then he talked about the health concerns. I think that was the issue that most of us had. Is it the money or is it the health concerns? It seemed like a mix of both.
I think that, look, everybody in our society is dealing with a health concern. This is a worldwide pandemic. Okay. And certainly we have to take great measure. And the great thing about medical science and our medical professionals, they're starting to develop the steering wheel of how to drive through the virus. And we know that age factors, we know that underlying medical conditions are really key in this process. And so getting more and more information and developing a compendia, looking at the models of the world that are, frankly, baseball is an isolated environment no matter where you play it because the ball players are going to and from their homes, they're traveling to ballparks, they're doing these things. And so these are the things that we have more information about. And I think the one thing I think the union has done is the message was clear. You compromised. You're taking a large salary concession because you're partnering with Major League Baseball and you're going to give away, 40% of your salary, whatever the number ends up being. And so every player is taking a salary cut. And the reality of it is that I think what players are most concerned with is that the union leadership brought to them together and they all collectively offered the compromise that was asked for. And they reached an agreement. And that agreement was settled by both sides. And in that agreement, the pay structure was codified. It's illustrated in the language. And it was really a job well done by both parties so that we have a labor management direction going forward. And I think that we need to work off that foundation that we created and understand that there is economic feasibility provisions in it. Talk about it, look at it. And then I think the leadership on both sides has set that foundation to work off of. Let them work. But if you go to alter the foundation, the integrity of the situation would be compromised, and that's what I think players would object to.
July 4th, are we playing baseball in your mind?
Well, that is probably above my pay grade, but I know every Sunday I'm asking that question and hoping that I get the right answer.
So. Yeah, no, we're all thinking about it. Scott, I got to ask you this. I'm so curious. Are you as excited as I am and as Joe is, we're Met fans, at the prospect of the Wilpon selling?
Yeah, that'd be great.
You know, the Wilpons, Fred Wilpon, very bright guy. He built the foundation for that with owning the network and having the franchise and built a beautiful ballpark. And I've always kind of teased in many ways that
we've loved the teasing, by the way.
You know, they built a rocket ship. The white cloud of smoke is burling. It's ready to take off, and it's just really all about the astronauts. You know,
they need new astronauts. You're right.
If you get the right astronauts in that platform, it could be a really successful franchise for a long, long time.
Scott, can you imagine Stevie Cohen as the astronaut, all those million-dollar contracts, $100 million contracts you get from the Mets?
You'd have everybody there, Scott. Everybody be playing for the Mets.
Well, I think that, you know, it's such a great privilege to represent gifted and privileged, you know, that to be around players that have that kind of skill and they have the character and the kind of people that you know can win world championships. And, you know, I said when I was doing Max Scherzer's contract, I told four owners, I said, you know what, only one team is going to get him, but I guarantee you, probably in a few years from now, that one team will win and none of you will without him. And you know what? That turned out to be true, and it just shows you the value of brilliantly skilled players with character and what they mean to franchises. And you know, the great thing about our game is the science of picking and choosing them and securing them and doing things. I look at these things in the past, and you can go back and, you know, in the pitching category, we had Maddux and we had a Kevin Brown. We had a Max Scherzer. We've had a Barry Zito. You know, we've had a Strasburg.
Yeah, but wait a second. You know else who you had? You had Oliver Perez. That didn't exactly work out for us, all right?
And you know what?
Oliver.
I want to tell you something. Oliver Perez has stayed in this league for
how long?
How many guys have done what they've done? And, you know, sometimes there is a dynamic of what people do. But Oliver Perez had his moment with the Mets against the Cardinals. If you remember that game?
I remember it.
It did well. And so when you go through these things and you can talk about ups and downs of players, but when you talk about players that do things that few players do, Oliver Perez is one of them. And so the reality of it is that sometimes you need the right forces around them. You need the right information. And you need, you know, sometimes players to mature into their careers. But all these dynamics, when you go to assess them, when you're talking about a guy that's going to have a 12 to 15-year major league career, you'd have to say that people who supported Oliver Perez were very right about him.
Do players mostly, and I think Gerrit Cole jumps into my mind because he grew up as a Yankee fan and all that, do a lot of players in free agency go to you and say, Scott, this is where I want to go, now get me there? Or do most go in with more of an open mind into free agency?
Yeah, I don't think free agency is it's an absolute. It is, you know, there's a passion to ownership and owning teams and commitments. And sometimes as you walk through free agency and you understand players and you get to know them and you meet with them, you've heard about them, you study their data, but when you get to meet them, it carries a moment. I remember, we had Andy Pettit and Aaron Boone in the room with Gerrit Cole. I mean, I think, you know, Andy did an amazing job of talking about what it meant to him to be a Yankee. Because he played for the Astros and then went back, and he and Gerrit had an exchange that was important to both of them. Because I think Andy understood him, and I think Aaron watched that. I think Cash, because of his experience, frankly knew about it. You know, because he really understood who Gerrit Cole was. Because I think he'd spent so much time, you know, examining him over the years because of their history.
Right.
But those kinds of things are very important to where. You get into a room and you have a meeting and you meet an owner and you understand his intent. It changes players' perceptions of teams, and teams change their perceptions of players, and that's why their decision-making is affected by the process rather than what they thought about before they go into it.
How many players you represent now, Scott?
You know, all in all, usually over the last 15 years, we usually represent anywhere from, we're pretty selective, anywhere from 80 to 90 major leaguers, you know, that's, and of course we have players coming in the minor leagues that we, in the next generation of players we think are going to be very impactful it's really, we have Sports Fitness Institute, we have psychologists, we're very much involved in working with the teams and developing players. That is really one of the more enjoyable processes to walk through, to get a player to play optimal and really understand him, because each player is is unique in their own thought process, and how we can get their skill to be really something that is at its best. And that is a real challenge. This game comes after us in many ways, and I'm so fortunate to have people that work for me. I have 140 people that work for me, and we have really a layer of trainers, nutritionists, strength and conditioning coaches. We have medical review. We have, psychologists. We have all these elements that really give the players we represent, I think, a greater opportunity to succeed in the game and sustain their careers and reach their optimum.
We're talking to Scott Boras. Now, if I'm misinterpreting you, correct me, but I think Yankee fans and Met fans all dream about winning a World Series and being at Yankee Stadium or Citi Field. Why do you want to take that away from us with this neutral site idea?
I'll tell you why. Because it's better for the game.
How?
And I'll tell you why it's better for the game.
Go ahead.
Is that I've always used the analogy, why would you take your best steak and serve it at a fast food restaurant? And the reason I say that is there's no preparation for the gala, for the World Series. Do you know how many more international people and people around the world, if you can plan where the venue of the World Series is, that you can have entertainment, you can have, you know, our All-Star game is the best All-Star game in professional sports by far. And the reason is we have it as a designated site. We have it there. We know it's planned. A lot of exhibitions come to it. We can surround the event. The other thing is that season ticket holders from teams, you can bring in your major season ticket holders, even though your team's not in it, and you can bring them to the event. And unlike the Super Bowl where there's only one game, you can actually get them to one of the seven games. You can actually promote baseball by using the World Series, even though your teams aren't in it.
But what about the diehard fan of the team? You know?
Exactly.
The diehard fans in sport are very accustomed to this in football. And they're very accustomed in the idea that you're going to get all the playoffs. You're going to get everything there at your home court. But the World Series is this gala. We can have the rewards for the MVPs, Cy Youngs there. We can have a true home run hitting contest. We can really create a venue for this, because when you have the World Series and you don't know where it's going to be to the last moment, there's just so many people that do not attend. There's so many people that are not involved in the greatest spectacle, and you can do a mixing of the entertainment community. You can bring a lot more attraction and make it an attraction rather than a momentary afterthought that you don't know until the last playoff game is over. Mm-hmm. And while the fans there, when you argue about the number of fans that actually do attend a World Series, take a look. And the answer is that the local community, because of the amount of tickets that are purchased by MLB and what's gone on and the corporate sponsors and all the things, is the reality of it is this is the greatest moment in our sport. We need to plan for it. We need to create a stage for it. We need to modernize it to where we can bring this to a worldwide spectacle. And we can do that by bringing stars, people of notice. We can bring so much more to this. We can bring every year the stars of the major leagues to the World Series because of the fact the gala for the awards is going to be there. You can do that with, you can just do so much more when it's a planned event. And families who want to take their children to the World Series, because it is a planned event, and they can actually set it up with their schools, they can set it up with their businesses, and they can make that moment happen more likely than not when it's an unknown.
Hmm. Would the games be a start earlier? If you're going to have a neutral site World Series, okay, you want to compare it to the Super Bowl, then you're going to start the games at 6 o'clock at night on the East Coast?
I think that, again, I'm not the best person to ask that question, because I think from the standpoint of what attention and when the best time to start games is to optimize the World Series, I'm not sure I can answer that question. But I think all those factors can look at. I just want it to be a gala. I want it to be where the community from Japan, Korea, Taiwan, the Latin American countries, they can all say to their bosses, We know it's in the World Series is, you know, going to be in Chicago this year. We're going to go there. We're going to set up the hotels. We're going to do this. We're going to cover the World Series. We're going to get such much broader worldwide coverage. We're going to make it a worldwide event. And when you look at worldwide events, they're always the World Cup, you know, the Super Bowl. You look at all these things where industries are advancing. It is because they have a planned foundation so that everyone, corporate sponsorship, everything can be built around that. And the more stars and the more major league players you have at the World Series, the more entertaining it is for the audience, for interviews, for the media, and everyone. And there's a reason for them to be there because you're going to have the award ceremony that are coupled with it. So there's just a lot of synergy that operates from that platform. And also, you're going to get, for the hometown fans, you're going to get the rounds of the playoff. And, you know, you may very well enjoy having your team getting that notice and attention and being in something that is now a very different event than what it is now.
Well, I'll tell you.
Let me say this, though. Yes. I want to jump in this. Why would you play him in Chicago? I mean, seriously, why? If you're going to have the World Series in a neutral site, you can't play it in places where the weather's iffy, can you?
I just used that as an example.
Yeah, no, because you said Chicago. No,
Well, come on. You have many venues, obviously, where you're going to consider weather and we can look at that. But the major point of it is it's a designated city. You look at the weather. You look at the dynamics.
Right.
I wasn't specifically saying that. But remember, as it is now, you're playing in Chicago anyway. If the Cubs are in it, and the weather is such a concern to you anyway.
So. But I understand that. But you wouldn't want to play where the weather. I mean, you want to make sure that there be no rainouts, no rain delays. I mean, you want to play it in. If you're going to play it in a neutral site, you got to play it where the weather's not a factor.
Again, I think that's all part of the consideration of what a purpose of creating an environment where you may get. You know, I think the Super Bowl gets 300,000 or 400,000, 500,000 people that come to a city, and the stadium only holds 60,000.
Right.
So you may get over 1 million people that come to a city, and cities will be bidding for this, and they'll want it. And you can, because there are potentially multiple games that everyone can go to, so you can participate in actually going to the event and also be in the city for all the other activities and follow the other games that are ongoing that you can attend. So it really creates an opportunity that makes this the Oscars, of baseball, if you will.
I do see where you're coming from. I completely disagree with you, but I respect you, and I appreciate you coming on today. And stay safe, and thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Scott, man. We appreciate it.
It was a pleasure, and it was really kind of nice to talk baseball with you guys.
Yes.
All right, take care.
Thank you, Scott.
All right, Scott, you be well.
Scott Boras.
Interesting, huh?
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.